This is All Things Considered on North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Time again to discuss the week in North Carolina politics. Rob Schofield from the progressive NC Policy Watch and Mitch Kokai of the conservative John Locke Foundation are here for the conversation. Hi, guys.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff.
A federal three-judge panel ordered legislators on Monday to draw new maps by September 1st. Republicans have begun scheduling public hearings and will adopt the criteria for which maps will be drawn next week. But this process, as it has for decades, largely takes place behind closed doors by the majority party. The GOP is again consulting with Tom Hoffler. He's a go-to redistricting expert here in the United States. They used him 6 years ago as a consultant to pass maps that were ultimately ruled illegal. Mitch, should they have turned to another resource or expert this time?
Well, if you are looking at it from their vantage point, no, not necessarily, because their idea is to maximize Republican representation in the state House and the state Senate. And it wasn't as if they hired this consultant and said, well, let's come up with some illegal, unconstitutional way to do it. They said, let's hire someone who's going to help maximize the number of Republicans in these chambers. He used his expertise and what he thought would be constitutional. The courts have struck it down, so now they'll go back and use the same consultant again. Both parties have these sort of standard consultants that they use who can help maximize the advantages. Now, I said that if your goal was to maximize the number of Republicans, you use this consultant. If your goal was to have fair districts, they wouldn't hire a consultant. They actually wouldn't try to draw the districts to benefit one party or the other. Instead, they'd come up with a fair process that takes the redistricting out of the hands of the politicians. But it wasn't as if Hoffler came in and was trying to sneak something by the courts. They did what they thought was constitutional. Turns out it wasn't. Now they're going back to the drawing board.
This is sort of like hiring Anthony Scaramucci to come in and clean up the language in your staff's emails. I mean, this is you know, this guy is the crown prince of gerrymandering. He has been a hired gun for decades going around the country. He's drafted lots of the gerrymandered maps around the country, and it just shows that, you know, they're not serious about fixing this thing. They're going to drag it out as long as they possibly can. We're going to have delay until the court finally gets serious and orders them to do the right thing.
Briefly, quickly, before we move on to another topic, renewed calls came this week from Democrats, also some outside groups, for nonpartisan redistricting, something you and both of your organizations do support. Is there any sign of that taking shape this year?
I don't see it happening unless something forces it to happen. I don't see the General Assembly wanting to do it on its own.
Yeah, unfortunately, even though the President Pro Tem Berger and others have sponsored this kind of legislation in the past once they got in power, not something they're interested in.
Democratic Attorney General Josh Stein held a press conference Thursday announcing 45 layoffs, this stemming from a $10 million legislative budget cut. Stein says there is still a $3 million budget gap, more layoffs are possible, and public safety is potentially at risk. Republicans counter that the Justice Department has adequate funding. Rob, is the Attorney General being a little hyperbolic here?
I don't think so. I mean, I think this is really one of the worst outcomes of the 2017 legislative session. It was a provision that was never discussed. There was never any, it was even probably illegally inserted into the budget based on the legislature's rules at the very last minute. It's really part of a right-wing ideological crusade to cripple Stein's office. And I would wager that the folks that are going to run against Stein in 2020 are already planning their ads for attacking him for not doing his job properly. And part of that will be because of these cuts that he's had been forced to impose on all kinds of incredibly skilled staff who are doing criminal prosecutions and protecting our water and involved in tobacco cases. So it's one of the worst things that's come out of the General Assembly. I don't think he's being hyperbolic at all.
Yeah, there is hyperbole. I mean, obviously what you're looking at here is a political move against Josh Stein. I don't think anyone would be able to, with a straight face, say that it's anything other than that. But you also have to remember that the General Assembly put some money into additional district attorney, assistant district attorney's offices across the state, moving more of the court's resources into the line level where they're needed for cases. When you talk about public safety being threatened, the Department of Justice, the Attorney General's office, doesn't do any frontline prosecutions. Those are all done by local court systems. So the General Assembly, whether you agree with them or not, is saying, look, we're just shifting resources. These lawyers don't need to be working in Raleigh. They need to be working out in the far-flung counties of North Carolina doing the people's business.
They do the criminal appeals, though. I mean, they are doing the cases on, you know, sex offenders and all kinds of criminals who are doing criminal appeals in the appellate level. That's the folks in Stein's office who handle those. So it's not really correct to say that he's not handling frontline cases. Those are very much frontline cases.
Yeah, I mean, once they get past the initial trial level, that you're talking about appeals.
Yeah, still frontline.
Meanwhile, the UNC Center for Civil Rights, known for its work in helping the poor and disenfranchised, is a step closer to being banned from doing any litigation. A committee of the UNC Board of Governors says that the center should not be allowed to take on new clients or give legal advice to third parties. Mitch, why is this necessary?
The concern from those who are pushing this, and we should make clear that it's not entirely clear that the UNC Board of Governors as a whole is going to go along with it. The chair of that committee that voted on this voted against it. The chair of the overall board has been ambivalent about the idea, and so I'm not convinced that the full board is going to go along with it. But the committee that voted on this said, look, this is a political outfit. This is not an outfit that's just educating students about the legal process. They are involved in, as a university, UNC organization, suing other local and state government entities, and they shouldn't be doing this. This is not the same situation as a legal clinic. The University of North Carolina's law school has legal clinics, including legal clinics that do civil rights work. This is a political organization. It is, even though the folks who run it say this is completely funded by outside sources, it is affiliated with UNC. People who work with it work at UNC, so they do in some way get some not only university affiliation, but also funding if they're getting on retirement and that sort of thing. So basically, the people who are pushing this are saying this is something that the university should not be endorsing. This group could be working on its own. It could be the Julius Chambers Center for Civil Rights sitting in Chapel Hill right off campus with the same staff doing the same work, working with the students, but just not being affiliated with UNC.
It's the latest in a long-standing effort by the folks on the right to remake our university system. This is the same ideological crusade that's going against Josh Stein. We saw it in the firing of Tom Ross a couple of years ago with no explanation. Someone who was doing a wonderful job leading the university system. It's the same thing. They are doing their utmost to eradicate forces within the university with whom they see as dissenters from their point of view. So that's why folks handpicked by Phil Berger and others in the legislature, conservative leaders in the General Assembly, are leading this charge. So again, yeah, we have a privately funded center that is protecting fundamental rights, helping poor people, and that's not something that's favored by the folks currently running the General Assembly.
Is this as simple as moving it to a 501(c), making it a nonprofit? In all fairness, my employer, the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, has an endowment, I believe at this point, of upwards of $3 billion. Mm-hmm. Why not just disconnect this from the university and take away any controversy, real or perceived, that has to do with the center?
There are a lot of centers, I suppose, in the university system that could arguably be controversial. There are centers in the business school that are advancing a particular ideological...
But this is the most controversial one. Is it not?
I don't know. I don't know if that's necessarily the case. Maybe for the folks on the right it is. From the perspective of folks in the progressive side, they see it as an obvious function of a university center. It's teaching young people about the highest aspect of being a lawyer and being a legal professional. There's nothing, no higher calling you could have than to protect the downtrodden and people who have no other opportunity to be represented in fundamental rights cases. So, you know, from my perspective, it's not controversial at all.
But the problem, and the one that this issue is tackling, is this group being involved in filing lawsuits, especially lawsuits against other government entities. I don't think anyone who's involved in this says that students shouldn't be taught the law and that they shouldn't be taught about civil rights and the importance of civil rights. What they're saying is, why do we have this entity, which for all intents and purposes should be an outside entity? Why is it tied to UNC when it's involved in basically left-of-center political work?
But clinics do that all the time. When I was a law student, the clinic that I was involved with represented people suing the Social Security Administration. We sued the government because they weren't providing benefits to people who were entitled to them. There's nothing different. That's the same thing. That's what lawyers do. They often spend their time suing the government when they're not providing services to people that they're entitled to. And so I don't see why this is any different just because it's civil rights that have been discriminated against rather than, say, right to a public benefit. It's the same thing.
Is this left of center, or is this more in line with giving people a voice who don't have a voice?
If it's giving people a voice that don't have a voice, I mean, that's the same argument that they're making about it being political or not political. I mean, the idea is the law school should be for training future lawyers. It should have legal clinics. The type of work that Rob was talking about makes sense. But a political organization like the UNC Center for Civil Rights that is involved in advocacy and in litigation, suing other government entities, that's the problem that the Board of Governors members who are for this have said that they are trying to address.
Finally, and we're in a web extra portion, I imagine, depending on how I edit this, of our conversation. But finally, crews continue to work to restore power on Hatteras and Ocracoke Islands. Certainly awful news for the tourism industry that broke late last week. Governor Cooper has had, from my perspective, a visible role as this story has developed and gone national for several days. How do you think he has handled the situation on the Outer Banks?
I think well. I think governors love this stuff, and I think mm-hmm. it's got to be killing Pat McCrory that he's not around to do this right now.
He was good at this stuff.
This was his best thing, clearly, was getting into emergency situations. And I think Governor Cooper has sort of followed in that. He's following the standard playbook. He's done a good job of prodding the people to move things faster. It looks like now that the service will be restored earlier than we originally thought it would be. Even Attorney General Stein has been advising some of the tourists on how they can, you know, pursue their legal rights with respect to the vacations they've lost. So in general, it seems to me that the government has done a good job. And it also highlights the fact that this is the kind of public structures that we ought to be, you know, an infrastructure we ought to probably be doing a better job of investing in and protecting and not having such a vital part of our economy literally hanging by a thread.
Yeah, I don't think that there's anything that you could raise as an objection to what Governor Cooper has done. The thing you have to watch out for in these situations is that the politicians don't come in and step on the real important work that needs to be done, which is a threat. And that's why you see when there are major national emergencies, sometimes it takes a few days for the president and other big shots of that type to come in because they don't want to come in right in the middle of the hard work, knowing that some of the resources are going to be diverted toward them. I don't have the sense that has happened with Governor Cooper. He's been prudent about when to go down, when to talk, when to let the repair work actually take place.
As a small business conservative, does the governor get any brownie points from you for this kind of, and I'll use the word posturing or positioning, or is this something you by and large ignore?
I think this is something you expect out of a governor of any stripe. I mean, Democrat, Republican, if we ever had an independent or even a libertarian governor would probably go out there and say, look, this is tough. You know, hold on, what government services are there, we're going to help you with them. And, you know, as long as the governor wasn't diverting resources from what actually needs to be done so that people are helping him and keeping his retinue in line, then I think you're in good shape.
I agree, although I think maybe the libertarian governor might go out there and say, you guys are on your own. Find out.
Would be interesting, perhaps.
Well, if we ever have one, we'll know.
We'll find out. Mitch Kokai is with the John Locke Foundation. Rob Schofield works for NC Policy Watch, part of the North Carolina Justice Center. Thank you both.
Thanks,
Thank
Jeff.
You, Jeff.